On this episode of Video Culture, we'll talk summer vacation with John Candy in Summer Rental and the Great Outdoors.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast. In a place where everyone has an opinion. Two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills, and there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to a summer vacation-filled episode of John Candy. I'm Ryan Acree.
I'm Matthew Essery.
And, so we're talking, it's the, you know, the middle of the summer. Hopefully everybody's kicking back and drinking martinis and you know, not no martinis.
Martini summer drinks.
Like pina coladas, probably. Margaritas, you know.
Maybe a mojito. A mojito seems like a summer drink.
Good.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. You can tell that we're not big drinkers here at the show.
Coladas.
But anyway, we're talking about summer vacation movies, and summer vacation movies led by the great, the immortal John Candy.
God, I love just about every movie that he's in. I love seeing him. He's just so fun. You feel like you know him. He's just so friendly and, you know, such a big presence, but just like so, you know, warm-hearted and funny, and I mean, yeah. I just, you know, I miss all of his movies, but we also cherish all of his movies as well, you know.
To me, he feels like the world's best friend, you know, like he's like the perennial, like the very ideal of what it would be to have a best friend. Mm. He's got this like warm, big-hearted nature to him. Like, I can't even imagine him being anything other than, like, jovial.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've seen, he's been in episode where he's been, you know, frustrated or like, mad. But, yeah, he never, you know, he seems like he's the guy that would, you know, not really get angry at all. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, he just has, like, he has an innate sweetness about him, which works really well for comedies. Because you care about him, like, mm-hmm. And so it's good to put him in situations where he's kind of vexed, which is really what both these movies are kind of about. You're taking this very sweet, good-natured guy and putting him in, you know, very, very common, normal situations that are going to frustrate and vex him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in these movies, he's also kind of playing like sort of the everyman, right? Where he's the family sort of patriarch. Kind of the same way, and there are a lot of comparisons to the vacation movies, you know, of Chevy Chase, mm-hmm. you know, as far as I can't think of his character name off the top of my head, Clark Griswold,
yeah.
But here, I mean, he plays two characters that are, you know, not as like aloof, I guess you would say. As Clark Griswold is,
I'll tell you there's a bit of a distance with Chevy Chase and just his persona. Like Chevy Chase doesn't have that innate sense of warmth that Candy does.
Mm-hmm.
Like he always, no matter who Chevy Chase is playing, he always feels a little bit like a jerk, even when he's not a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got a bit of a sarcastic kind of smug quality about him. Where Candy is very, like, earnest and sincere.
Mm. It's a very good way of putting it. But just to go, I mean, so everybody should be familiar with John Candy's work. I mean, he's Spaceballs, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He's done some wonderful movies that I love. Uncle Buck, Who's Harry Crumb. He was in Splash, Brewster's Millions, which we covered on this show, Armed and Dangerous, which we talked about on this show. I mean, he's been as far back as, doing, 1941 and, even his first movie, Class of 44, even doing like later in his career, doing, movies like Cool Runnings, but kind of in the middle of his careers when he did, Summer Rental was 1985. And 1988 was The Great Outdoors. So just to kind of, springboard that into our discussion about Summer Rental, if you've never seen Summer Rental, like, it was on, like, TV almost all the time. Like, yeah, is that the way you feel, too?
That's, it's funny because I was going to talk about this. Because I remember when we first brought this up, I thought, oh, yeah, I've seen Summer Rental. Of course, I've seen Summer Rental. And then I saw the cover of it, and I'm like, maybe I haven't seen Summer Rental. And I started watching it. I'm like, I haven't seen this. I can't believe I thought I'd seen this my entire life, and I haven't seen this. But then a scene came up, and I'm like, I have seen this. And it all came flooding back to me. Yeah. And I've seen it easily 3 or 4 times as a kid.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because it's not a very kid-friendly movie. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's, but I definitely saw, I know I saw it a lot on television.
Yes.
I mean, despite not being kid,
I've seen Summer Rental so many times, I could probably like do the show without seeing either of these two movies. I've seen them so many times. Yeah. Like, to be honest, really.
Like, it all came flooding back to me. Like it was so funny because I had no memory of it. And then suddenly it all came just like flooding back to me.
Well, okay. So I have a reason why I think that is. And part of it is those intro scenes where he's with his family and he is like the air traffic controller and he's in Atlanta. Like, I think I've only seen those particular scenes, that intro scene before he gets to the beach, like maybe 2 or 3 times. And
yeah.
It's because you never catch the beginning part of the movie. You're always watching it on TV where you're flipping through and they're like, oh, here's John Candy. Here's like Summer Rental or whatever. And then like he's already like at the beach or whatever. So let's go over the quick synopsis right quick. Jack Chester, an overworked air traffic controller, takes his family on vacation to the beach. Things immediately start to go wrong for the Chesters and steadily get worse. Jack ends up in a feud with a local yachtsman and also has to race him to regain his pride and family's respect. That was written by a Rob Hertel on IMDb.com. Thank you very much. So, yeah, it's just like he's an air traffic controller. So this goes back to like the same sort of stories like Pushing 10 where, these air traffic controllers are such in like, such a high profile position and a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. And then, he makes a couple little errors and they're forcing him to go on like, like a 4-week vacation or something.
Yeah. And I just want to say, if you want to know more about Pushing 10 and why we reference that movie in relation to this movie, our episode on Pushing 10 is available on the on our show's website, video-culture.com. Go check it out.
Man. So you might not see all of the episodes that go back to our other seasons through your whatever you get your podcast through, but all the episodes are definitely on our website if you just check out the episodes. We talked about John Cusack, but then after that, like you just go and very quickly he's on the family with his beach, and of course he's married to his wife and he's got 2 kids. He's got an older daughter and a younger son, right? But the younger son is Joey Lawrence. And his older daughter is Cary Green, who also like was in The Goonies and Lucas and
And we also did an episode on Lucas, so if you, again, check that out in our show's archives,
Yeah. Joey Lawrence was on Blossom, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know if he really did anything else after that, but he was definitely on Blossom.
yeah, he was. So, but it's a fun movie. And then all of a sudden, Rip Torn shows up right in the middle of it.
Yeah. Rip Torn plays like this restaurant owner who's his gimmick is he's kind of a pirate. He's got a hook for a hand, and he definitely plays up this pirate persona, but he used to be a sailor.
Yeah.
Basically, the plot of Summerrental really comes down to a snobs versus slobs scenario, which was pretty common in the 80s. Kind of like your Revenge of the Nerds, you know, kind of plot.
Yeah.
Where you got Candy and his family who run afoul of this rich guy who lives in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Candy pisses him off, and he buys their Summerrental home and tries to throw them out.
Right.
And so they're going to engage in this big boat race to try to basically win back their rental so they don't have to quit their vacation early. That's really the plot. That's the motivating story of the film.
Well, I just thought it was, you know, at first it's like this great sort of, you know, vacation story with all these great sort of things that sort of happen before he meets Scully, which is played by Rip Torn. Yeah, which I'll talk about Rip Torn in a minute, because another movie that we discussed, which was Dodgeball, a weird connection with that movie. But about the plot is like there's these regular sort of just like what I call sort of shenanigans that happen, right? Like just sort of everyday things, like he shows up at the wrong house, and you know, because it's like a difference between Beach Lane and Beach Road, and then. He goes into the rental, and the rental's like a dump, right? It's not quite the same thing that they probably looked at in a brochure or something like that. The next thing is like, you know, he goes to the beach and he gets, you know, sunburn on the first day. Yeah. He you know, tries to find his family on the beach, and there's just like a bunch of people, and he's like dumping water over everybody, which is one of my favorite scenes, by the way. And then after that, like, it just like kind of falls into a doldrum, and then like you're like, where do we go? And he's like, you know, he's trying to relax and find himself, and then when he meets Scully, you really find out, like, you know, he you know, gets drunk with him, and he kind of like drops his you know, insecurities, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, it almost feels like two separate films.
Right.
You have that very episodic beginning, which to me is the most fun stuff of the movie. I mean, the stuff with him accidentally dipping water on people is clearly one of the highlights of the film, because it's actually used in the film's marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. If you look at the show art on the website, the poster for Summerrental is actually a painting of that scene.
Right.
That's how well regarded it is within the movie. So it has its episodic nature, but then when the plot kicks in, it becomes kind of a different film about Candy learning how to sail and kind of discovering self-respect.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but that part of the movie I didn't like as much. Mm-hmm. I appreciated it. It's fine.
Yeah.
But I kind of liked the kind of episodic nature of the beginning.
Yeah. Because it turns into this, you know, where he's almost ignoring his family and spending time sailing. And then, like, then he gets caught into this, like, contest. And then it becomes the last sort of, you know, the last sort of third of it or fourth of it comes about, like, the, you know, the regatta or whatever. And then winning the regatta.
It's got a very weird plot structure.
Yeah. And then after the regatta, it just ends. It just drops you off. Yeah. Like, okay, we won. But that's not what the movie was, like, sort of all of about. I think they missed some sort of, like, you know, sort of redemption and stuff like that with Jack Chester's, you know, sort of like character, I guess.
Yeah.
There's another thing too, where John Larroquette shows up as like the, you know, this other guy, just like, you know, that makes friends with his wife and the family.
It feels like his part was completely cut out of the movie. Like he's introduced, and you think he's going to be like this kind of romantic foil for Candy. Like he's this divorced husband. He's a single dad with a kid, and he's spending time with Candy's wife while Candy's busy off learning to sail with Rip Torn. And you think, oh, it's going to be like a little like C plot or whatever to the film, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, it goes nowhere.
And I think Larroquette had like three lines in the entire movie.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So yeah. It feels like his part was really cut out. I mean, I don't know for sure, but like, it's just weird to have him in there. And he's built pretty predominantly. He's like the fourth built actor in the film, but he's like barely in it.
Well, and it is kind of a strange thing, like, of, you know, his wife running around with another guy, you know, that she just met, you know, and he's offering to like pay for the kids, you know, movies or whatever. And then, you know, she's like, oh, we're going to go out on his boat and we're going to do all this kind of stuff. It's like, how did this happen? How did you get into a conversation where he's like, hey, I come out to my boat, you know, and she's just going to go and leave it. Yeah. It's just really kind of strange.
But doesn't it feel like chunks of it are missing?
Right. Well, I think the only reason why is because you have to have ways for Jack Chester to get alone. Because that's how he gets involved with the neighbor. And then, like, a bunch of people come into his house. And then also how he winds up, like, you know, drinking on the boat and spending out time sailing and stuff like that. Because he has to get away from his family. So I think it's just kind of a ruse so that we can get Jack Chester away from his family, which is weird because then he has to come back to them and they're, you know, it's all rather strange.
And like, little Larroquette and his kid are watching in the stands, cheering him on. No. Like, oh, well, I guess that was, no, he's watching him in the stands. He's cheering for them. And it's just like, and he's never really mentioned again. He's just like a bystander there at the end.
I will say, I never would have thought this deeply about this movie when I watched it as a kid. Did you?
No, I didn't. It's weird what I remembered about the movie. I remembered a lot of the boat scenes. I remember stuff with Rip Torn. I remember the funniest gag in the entire film.
Okay.
And it's going to be a little hard to explain that if you haven't seen Submersible. So anyways, listening to this, please bear with me and please don't think less of me. If you haven't seen it, you're not going to understand. The funniest gag in the entire movie is the one about the lady with the fake boobs.
Oh, yeah.
That gag is legitimately hilarious.
Yeah.
And that's when I clearly remember, like, oh, yeah, I've seen this more than once. Because I remember that gag and all that, the way it repeated throughout the film. Like, that's when it all like came flooding back to me like the Dead Zone. Like, I could suddenly remember the entire film, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, there's this great gag where Candy is walking around without his family, and his neighbor comes up to him, and it's very attractive, like in an 80s sort of way, lady in a bikini, and she invites him over for lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
And you think maybe he's gonna maybe cheat on his wife, or she's gonna make a move on him, but really all she does is she wants him to see her brand new fake boobs,
mm-hmm.
which was a novel thing at this in 1985,
right.
And it's meant to be a gag. Like he gets very nervous. He's like, you know, they don't show them, but he's like, he gets all flabbergasted. Then you find out the lady's husband is home. And you think they're going to do a thing where he has to run out of the house and the guy's going to chase him?
Mm-hmm.
The husband comes down and goes, honey, would you stop showing people your boobs? I told you they're nice.
Yeah. And then he says, would you feel it for me?
Yeah. Just let her. He's like, mister, just let her know. Let her know they're nice. I spent a lot of money on him. She's very insecure. And they repeat this gag like three or four times with different characters throughout the movie. And the guy's timing is very funny. Like the guy who plays her husband is just so like tired of her crap. And it's just a really funny, disarming scene. It's honestly my favorite joke in the entire movie.
Ed Sanders and Vicky Sanders were the characters' names, but Lois Hamilton is the lady. And I can't pronounce that. But anyway,
I'm sure I've seen him in other things, but God knows where.
Yeah, I think he was in. Was he in the guy in from Alice's Restaurant? Is that right? Carmine is Ed Sanders. He's been in a few different like films and TV shows. So. He was in The Money Pit, actually, and he was in Brewster's Millions.
That's where I know him from, then, for sure.
Yeah. He was in The Godfather Part 2. He's been in Bugsby. So, yeah. his character actor. Just, you know, one of those guys that you just see. Oh, yeah, there's that guy. You know?
We love those guys here at Video Culture.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, just a very kind of messy structure. But, I mean, and I'll go ahead and say it. Not as laugh-out-loud funny as I kind of thought it would be going into it, rewatching it. Like, I was expecting it to be a lot more hilarious, when really it's more of a, well, that was nice kind of movie, you know? Like, it made me smile.
Mm-hmm.
And it's short.
Yeah.
You know, and with the movie making me smile and being short, as a guy who watches a lot of films, that's all I can really ask for sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm. I failed to mention earlier that it was directed by Carl Reiner, who also directed, you know, I mean, this is Rob Reiner's dad, right? Like, he's acted in lots of movies. He's directed a lot of very many successful movies, such as The Jerk, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, Summer School, Fatal Instinct. So that was the other thing, too, is he also, a couple of years later, directed a movie called Summer School. Another title was Summer in it. But yeah, I mean, I think that's why the, like John Candy and like the, you know, this sort of, this family humor, that everybody can enjoy. I mean, it's rated PG, it's not even rated PG-13, even though, you know, she says, can you see the boobs? Like there is none on the screen. It's just kind of implied, where you see kind of her bikini top go up. But yeah. And then the, what I was going to mention about Rip Torn, was that he's a, you know, just like I mentioned on the Dodgeball show, the Dodgeball like has a character where he talks like in pirate all the time, and Rip Torn is like, you know, the Dodgeball coach. Well, in Summer Rental, Rip Torn is the one that talks like a pirate, and he's also kind of the same sort of character where he's like coaching and being the hard-nosed coach to John Candy's character.
Yeah, I would be surprised if the scriptwriters for Dodgeball had seen Summer Rental, and maybe not consciously referenced it, but it definitely feels like there was an homage there.
I think it definitely was an homage.
Yeah,
I think it was. It had to have been, right? I don't think that. I think they were very closely related. We'll have to ask Ben Stiller sometime.
Yeah, Ben, if you're listening, please come on the show. You know, we know you're not doing much nowadays. I kid.
He's too busy to be on our silly little show. But yeah, I think that I still love those scenes, though, even though that it feels kind of like two different movies. I watch it and, you know, I just know like where it's going to go. Like it's going to go to this scene, to this scene, to this scene. And it always kind of like carries you along to what they're doing or whatever. I just wish there was more sort of connection with his family, because there's only like montages or like scenes where he's like connecting with his daughter, with Cary Grant. And then they work on the boat. There's that montage where they work on the boat. And then he's like, oh, yeah, with the crew of the Barnacle, please raise their drinks. And I'm like, you know, there was no like real discussion about that beforehand. So it didn't really feel like that grand of a moment anyway. We're nitpicking it, but I love the Summer Rental. I don't think there's any other like funny or amusing movie like Summer Rental, like going to the beach. Like all the vacation movies are about going to other places. They're Christmas Vacation. They're going to like a Disney World type place, going to Wally World, or they're going to Vegas, or, you know, something else. Like they don't.
Yeah.
There's no real beach sort of vacation that they go to. And this is the only real like family vacation beach movie, I think, that, you know, that's this amusing. That's not like, I don't know, you know, like a young kind of movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not like
Bingo or something.
Yeah, right? It's not like Frankie Avalon and Annette Funicello and stuff like that.
Right.
But that leads me into of course, the question we always ask in this show. What's your rewind and savor moment from Summer Rental? What's your favorite scene that you could watch over and over again?
I have two. I'm going to cheat because I have two. The first scene is the scene that we talked about before where he's got the cooler and it comes open and it's just like he's pouring water over everybody. I mean, I can totally see myself doing that. And it's absolutely hilarious. And it's absolutely so much fun. All the shenanigans that happen, like, on the beach, you're just like, oh, my God. Even though that it's, like, kind of the worst kind of situations, I still love that scene. The other one that I like, and you may not agree with me, is when he's first learning how to sail with Scully, and they're out on the little boat, and they start singing The Love Boat.
Oh, no, I actually really like that scene, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, something about that scene just makes you, because, you know, all the shots are, like, during the day. That was only, like, yeah. The real, like, there's only, well, not the only. They went to the first restaurant when they were, when it was nighttime. But to be out there sailing was very sort of, you know, romantic. It feels like you wanted to be there with them and have that much fun with them.
It really feels like two guys just having fun, you know, right. Goofing around.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cute moment. I think I'd have to agree with you. I think I would if I had to choose just one or two moments, I would choose the same two moments, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I know that doesn't make for, you know, great discussion, but I completely agree with you.
So anything we want to, like, fast forward through, or
yeah, what would we fast forward through? Honestly, I'll go ahead and say I would cut out the John Larroquette stuff because it literally adds nothing to the movie.
Mm. Okay.
As much as I enjoy seeing the vintage movie theater with the vintage movie posters as a movie nerd, you know, like, literally, he's a complete non-entity in the film. And yeah. I like John Larroquette, and I found that disappointing. Like, I was looking at, when I saw his name in the credits, I'm like, oh yeah, I love John Larroquette. And just nothing. So I found that was a little bit of a disappointment for me, because I love Night Court. I liked his standalone sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I was sad to see him not be a bigger part of the film, so you might as well just lose his entire character, because he added nothing.
Yeah. Sadly, I'd probably agree. I would, I don't know how much I would fast forward through, to be quite honest, because I like it all. I wish there was actually kind of more sort of, I'll go the opposite direction. I'll say I wish there were more setup to why he's going to the beach, and also part of the journey to get there to the beach as well. I think there were some deleted scenes that were cut out.
Yeah. Like, I'm convinced there's like most of his performance had to have been cut out for some reason. I don't know if it was just pacing and wanting to keep, like, the idea that comedies have to be, like, snappy and had to be short. Mm-hmm. But like it feels like there was a whole arc there missing.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, well, let's move on to The Great Outdoors, which was 1988, directed by Howard Deutsch, and produced by John Hughes, who they did a few different movies together, like Some Kind of Wonderful and a few others. Can't remember. 16 Candles, I think. Anyway, I'll read the quick synopsis. Nostalgic about the good old days with In the Honeymoon Cabin, the patriarch Chet and the Ripley family set off to the idyllic woods of Wisconsin for the summer vacation. However, their plans for a peaceful family bonding in the heart of the untamed nature will be thwarted when the high-rolling brother-in-law, Roman, and the snotty Craig family decide to crash the party. Eventually, the two families try to have a good time together, seemingly endless series of misfortunes and many disasters with thirsty leeches, cunning raccoons, and a mythical wild bear threaten to ruin the vacation. What will it take to salvage the weekend? So, yeah, this is, I mean, you can tell it's like kind of like John Hughes, because it's like the family's in Chicago, right? And then they're going to the great outdoors. They're going to, you know, this is a family vacation to get them out of the city, right?
Yeah, basically they're going up to, like, the rural area that's not really far away. They're going to, like, a lake in a wooded area for a typical, like, you know, 1980s family vacation. Mm-hmm. Like, you mentioned how there weren't a lot of movies about, like beach vacations. It was like there are a lot of movies about, like, summer stuff that takes place around lakes and forests.
Yeah.
And this is another one.
Yeah, but a lot of those are like, you know, summer camps for kids where they're like being, you know, all the kids together, where it's not like a family, you know, together out in the cabins or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, much like Summer Rental, though, this one has a very kind of episodic quality. It just never loses the episodic quality. It stays episodic kind of throughout its entire runtime.
Yeah, there's no real stuff other than what's going on with the family, right? There's kind of like a subplot of the the eldest son with one of the local girls, but everything else is just very episodic. It's just very one thing after the next, after the next, after the next, and then you get to the end, like the final, like little bit of it, like the final act is, two things is where, Dan Aykroyd's character, who's, very sort of, narcissistic and throughout the whole, like, sort of movie. And then you realize that, like, he's, lost his seat on the exchange and he has to admit that he's, kind of in dire straits. And then, like, the kids go missing and then that's when, the bear shows up and the whole bear rescue,
Yeah, basically, it's like they realized in the last 15 minutes they had no narrative conflict, and they put it all right in that last 15 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's no other real, conflict. It's just very, like,
in that respect, it's a lot more like the National Lampoon Vacation films.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it just kind of ambles along
mm-hmm.
with, like, little funny asides throughout. But you're right, it does have like this young adult romance as the one main, or the mm-hmm. one like subplot that's not broken up that kind of ties everything together.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes it feel more cohesive than it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Like as a kid, I never realized how kind of segmented it all was,
mm-hmm.
but it is very much like short story, short story, short story, and this young teen romance kind of plot like wrapped around all of it.
Right. Well, there's definitely a lot more like, a lot more closer relation to Chet Ripley and Clark W. Griswold, right? Like, they both kind of get caught in these very awkward situations, right? Because there's the, the lake scene where he's, like, off with the, got teared off on the speedboat, just, like, wreaking havoc all over the lake, skiing behind it, which is very much like, you could make references to Christmas Vacation when he's on the saucer, right? And then there's like the bears where he's got the the bears are like on crawling all over his car because he called them over there like an idiot.
I mean honestly you could just scribble out the names and make this a National Lampoon's Vacation movie.
You definitely could.
I mean it works entirely. I mean, it could just be about another one of Clark's relatives who was a wealthy day trader.
Right. Instead of, it's the exact sort of mirror opposite of,
of Cousin Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's like this rich guy, but he's like kind of lost his way.
Yeah. And he's still obnoxious, just obnoxious in a different way.
Right.
Yeah.
There's even the video scene where they where they're in kind of like European Vacation where John Candy's character and his wife's character are think they're alone
and then here comes Dan Aykroyd's
Roman with the video camera, right?
Yeah. It's got a little more sexual humor than Summer Rental, which makes it, again, feel more like the National Lampoon's Vacation movies. It never really hit me, but it is very, very similar to a National Lampoon's Vacation movie. I kind of threw that out there, but the more I think about it, the more I think you really could just change the names, and it would fit almost one for one as a vacation film.
Well, I think John Hughes submitted it to, the Lampoon's, I think, to have it made into like a National Lampoon, but the National Lampoon, like their sort of like organization or whatever, were like, no, we're not going to really do that, and so he just kind of took it on his own and did his own movie, kind of in the same way, just kind of rewrote some things to where it wasn't so,
because it doesn't feel like anything else that John Hughes ever wrote. I mean, it really doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't have that same quality. Like, it's got weird asides with talking animals. Like, it's got these scenes where there are raccoons at night that are subtitled, which are honestly some of the funnier. No, I'm saying that there's some of the funnier things in the entire movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's nothing else like that anywhere else in John Hughes' films.
No.
That feels very kind of wacky, you know?
It is.
Feels very National Lampoon-y. And it's funny, but it just strikes me how little this feels like a John Hughes script.
Right. Yeah, definitely. It does really feel rather strange. And then the whole Dan Aykroyd, though, let me tell you, Dan Aykroyd plays an awesome like jerk, doesn't he? You know?
Yeah. He just feels so kind of obnoxious.
Yes. And slimy.
Like you could get that he could con people, but you still, you know, he's kind of walks that line between you can see that he could con people, but he makes you uncomfortable at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, yeah, when he's like got his cell phone
his giant 1980s cell phone, yeah.
Yeah, picking hairs out of his nose, you know, in the bathroom. But yeah, I mean, just excellent performance. I mean, he really, to be quite honest, Dan Aykroyd kind of almost stole the show, to be quite honest. You know what I'm saying? In the scenes.
Yeah.
But he did it on purpose. I mean, his character is supposed to have this kind of like jerky sort of charisma. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he definitely plays well off of, again, it goes back to how Candy kind of radiates that sort of sweetness, that sort of like nice guy quality.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a real yin and yang in the film. And that's really why The Great Outdoors works so well, is because those two opposing energies play really well off each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it really works, because you've got Aykroyd being loud,
mm-hmm,
and Candy kind of being kind of a sweet, kind of goofy guy.
Yeah.
And they interplay very well together.
Yeah. Annette Bening also plays Dan Aykroyd's wife, Kate. And this is her first debut film in the.
Yeah. She looks really young in this. Like, I was kind of struck by how young she looked.
Mm-hmm.
She's good at it, though, as like this trophy wife, you mm-hmm know?
Yeah, but she's been in The Grifters, American Beauty, Being Julia, The Kids Are All Right, and she's Wendy Larson in Captain Marvel. She's come like a long way. But yeah, I mean, here she is in her first film, and yeah, just like doing really great of, you know, giving a lot of attention, kind of being there, but not really, you know, kind of scene stealing, I guess you would say, just being really, you know, sort of entertaining. And I thought her, you know, character was great. You've definitely met those people, right? You've definitely met.
Yeah.
These,
oh yeah. Yeah. People who kind of subtly brag about what they have while trying to act like they're not bragging, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they just happen to name drop where they go on vacation or how expensive their dinner was last night, or, you know, what kind of car they drive.
Oh yeah.
Just
very casual. Oh yeah. Like, oh yeah, I saw something similar when I was in Rome last year. You know, it's like,
yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, but yeah, great. There's not much to talk about plot wise to this movie. I mean,
no.
And it's just, like I said, it's really just a bunch of little vignettes and a little funny scenes. So since it's mostly just funny scenes, what's your rewind and savor scene from The Great Outdoors, Ryan?
What's my favorite moment? That's a hard one, because there's just a bunch of good ones. The old 96er is always a classic.
That's a good one. That's still nothing but gristle and fat meat. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And also too, I love how the chef is like this real sort of Rip Torn-ish kind of character too. That's really great.
Yeah. So the old 97, which I think that actually inspired the whole idea of food challenges. Like, I'd never heard of a food challenge until I saw this movie as a kid. So I think that was kind of what planted the seed for what we now think of as like man versus food.
Oh.
Cause I had never seen that in pop culture until then.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess so. I guess it's been revitalized. I mean, Nathan's had the you know, hot dog eating competition, you know, up in
that's more people competing against each other. This is the idea of like some weird or like big or like crazy dish that one person
right
has to finish to get like some sort of prize.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like I ate 40 tacos and I get a t-shirt.
Yeah, right. Yeah, true.
Yeah,
it is true. I mean, I don't really know how much of that was before this movie, but I would think that, you know, it's had like an impact on our culture in that way. You're absolutely correct.
Yeah. And Candy kills that scene. And he is so, like, it's such a funny bit of non-acting or non-verbal acting from Candy.
Yeah.
Like, as he's eating it, he's all confident. And then he gets like slower and more timid as he goes along.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really funny stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, just, I mean, and that's the way, that's just like classic, you know, Candy. Like, he can always play this kind of a goofball guy with this nice little, you know, with his you know, cackle or whatever you want to call it. And then, you know, do a little bit of physical comedy like that. You know what I mean? Like the.
Yeah. Just become very like puppy dogish suddenly, like very timid.
Yeah.
And it's just really funny and it works really well. That's easily one of the highlights of the movie. And when I think of The Great Outdoors, that's honestly the scene I think of every time. like the trailer in my head when someone said that movie to me, that's what I think of. I think of him eating the steak and being panicked when he realized he has to eat dessert too.
Or the gristle and the fat on the plate or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What else? Oh, anything you would fast forward through?
Well, I didn't say what my favorite moment was. Let's back up for a second.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to make sure your sound's working again. You kind of popped for a second.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. So my favorite scene, my other favorite scene is one that's not one you didn't mention. It's actually what plays over the end credits. You know, we've talked about before how much I like musical and dance stuff.
Mm.
The movie sort of ends with like a big dance scene. Doesn't fit into the rest of the movie. It's like the cast is having almost like a party in the film.
Oh, yeah.
And it's
yeah, they play the 60s like song or yeah.
Yeah, it's basically them dancing in the restaurant.
Right.
I don't know why they filmed that. I don't know what it was for. Cuz it doesn't fit narratively in the film at all.
No.
But it's really just the characters having fun dancing to a 60s rock tune and Dan Aykroyd's, you know, tearing it up and just hamming it up, and it's really fun. It's got a real vibrancy to it, and it leaves you thinking the movie, this is gonna sound bad, but it leaves you thinking the movie's better than it is. Mm. When it's over, it ends on a real high note because of that.
I see. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, it is a fun scene. I mean, Dan Aykroyd is one of the Blues Brothers, right? So I mean,
yeah,
that's just how it is. I mean, and this is not the first movie that like John Candy and Dan Aykroyd have done together. They've done, you know, like other films and stuff too. But yeah, I don't. It's hard to think about. But what about fast forwarding? Like any? Let me think about. I'm trying to think what scenes I would fast forward through.
There's not anything.
Yeah, go ahead.
I can't think of anything I would really take out because I don't dislike anything in it that I can think of.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't. I'm. To me, you can almost cut out like the bear scene, with the, you know, the you almost have to have it in there. So I don't know. Some of the scenes with the girls seem kind of awkward. But yeah, I mean, it is because she goes from like being very sort of hard nosed, and then he like sees her at the restaurant like a day later and she's like all friendly with him and smiles. And I'm like, what the heck? Like, why?
That's just teenage girls, man. I don't think you remember what teenage girls were like.
But. No, I don't. Maybe I didn't have enough interaction back then. You know, yeah. Especially girls like her. I mean, she's like smoking and she's like, you know, playing pool. I mean, she's, you know, way out of my league, I tell you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
See, I guess I always hung around those kind of people when I was younger. They're very much like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Hot and cold, as they say.
I see.
But yeah, I mean, it's also segmented. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, you could really lose almost any chunk of it and not really change the movie.
Yeah.
But nothing really sticks out to me as being like bad.
Mm.
So I can't think of anything I would cut out of the film really.
No. Yeah, very much. I mean, I think it being stolen from, like, culture, it's part of our, you know, once again, this was another movie that was on TV, like, all the time. And it just,
oh, yeah.
Even the bat scene, you know, where they're chasing the bat in the house, I mean, I think The Office, like, stole that. And so many other
Oh, shows, yeah, definitely.
TV shows and movies have stolen that sort of idea, too. But I don't remember it even happening until, like, this movie.
Yeah. Like, and that's another scene that I didn't remember until I watched it again. And then it all came back to me very suddenly. Like, oh, yeah, I remembered every beat as it happened. Yeah.
Right. So now we have to decide, like, are we going to keep these movies an extra day and pay the late fees, or are we going to, return them on time?
Well, I'm gonna have you answer that one first. I'm curious what you would say.
I'm keeping both these movies. I don't care. I mean, the Summer Rental, because I own Summer Rental and I watch it all the time. It's one of those movies that, you know, it's kind of like it goes in with the vacation movies, and the same with The Great Outdoors. I mean, here in Nashville, we go up to like Gatlinburg and the Smoky Mountains, and yeah. so rent out cabins. I mean, we're not like right next to the lake, but I mean, these are like fantastic movies that I would I have watched over and over and over. And matter of fact, I probably could have done this whole show without having seen them recently.
Well, and. Well, don't hate me, because I think I would return them early. Not that I didn't enjoy them. Let me clarify again. Not that I didn't enjoy them. I enjoyed them.
Okay.
I want to make that very clear.
Okay.
I just don't think I feel any desire to rewatch them again anytime soon.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think they were just I'm trying to think if they're almost like vapor. They're just so light, and they're just like. It's like the movie equivalent of meringue. It's just very, it's very sweet, but it has no substance.
Right. I mean, I was going to say that in the show, like John Candy, like, you know, watching his movies is kind of like, grabbing the candy dish, right? Like all of his movies are kind of like that, I think. I mean, a lot of his movies are.
Yeah. And I mean, they are. Yeah. Cause that was kind of his persona. And it's not that I don't. It's not that I didn't like them. I enjoyed both of them, but I don't think there's enough meat on the bone for me to want to revisit them anytime soon. I'll surely will rewatch them again, but not like probably for another like 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I mean they're definitely not like cinema. They're definitely not like cult. They don't like have a cult behind them. You know what I'm saying? They're not really cult movies.
Well, I would kind of love to see a cult based around the Great Outdoors, like guys dressing up like Dan Aykroyd's like Roman and going to having like a convention with like giant cell phones and like people wearing like bald headed bear costumes.
Yeah, that'd be
pretty sweet.
That would be hilarious. But yeah, I think it's just part of like the American culture, a lot like the like Griswold and the vacation movies, and that's the way that I enjoy them. You know what I'm saying? So. They're great movies to watch like during the, summer season. You know, we have Christmas movies, Christmas vacation movies. We have other stuff. I just think they fit in that same sort of category, comedic category, I guess you would say.
I would agree.
All right. So then let's go ahead and go to the notes then. Summer Rental was, of course, released in 1985. This movie was developed at Paramount by the team of Barry Diller, Michael Eisner, and Jeffrey Katzenberg. Those are three big names, my friend. Yes.
They really are, yeah.
I mean, so is Carl Reiner, obviously, but they all ended up leaving the studio before the film was made.
Huh.
The music is also done. I don't know if you know this, but the music was done by a guy named Alan Silvestri. You know?
I know Alan Silvestri. Yeah,
he's done the music for Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, The Polar Express, Avengers: Age of Ultron, the movies that we've talked about, The Abyss, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and a host of other movies. Like,
yeah,
big time movies. As far as
like music sorts go, Alan Silvestri is a titan. He's up there with John Williams as far as like the titans of like film scores.
Yeah. I mean, he did Back to the Future. I mean, it's huge. So that music that plays like throughout like the soundtrack, the reason that I think that it's so catchy is because it's written by like Alan Silvestri. And so My wife has almost requested this music to play when we do go to the beach this summer. So
yeah.
Summer Rental was one of three John Candy films released during the summer of 1985, which we also talked about. The others were Volunteers and then also where Candy reteamed with Splash co-star Tom Hanks. And no, he didn't. So Splash and then also Brewster's Millions.
So it's Splash, Volunteers, and Brewster's Millions.
Yes. Sorry.
So we've now covered two. We're going to figure out a way to do Volunteers on the show to complete the Candy 85 trifecta.
Yeah, figure out a way. We haven't done Splash either, right?
Oh yeah, that's true. Never mind.
John Candy, John Larroquette, and Lois Hamilton. You know, Lois Hamilton played the neighbor, kept showing her boobs. Yep. They all appear in the comedy Stripes.
That's I meant to mention that, so I'm glad you brought that up.
And the other weird thing about John Larroquette as well is that John Larroquette and Karen Austin, who played John Candy's wife, they co-starred on the original Night Court for the first two seasons. She was replaced after the second season with the other guy. She played like the clerk.
Yeah, she was replaced. I can't think of his name. But the character was Mac. Was the character that replaced her?
Night Court. Yeah, Mac. Yeah. So, but yeah, isn't that weird? Like they were both on the show, basically.
Yeah. It's a weird little coincidences.
Yeah. So Charles Robinson was his name.
Charles Robinson, good actor in a lot of TV shows.
Yes. Summer Rental was filmed the location in St. Pete Beach, so St. Petersburg and St. Pete Beach, and several local landmarks can be seen throughout the movie, including the St. Petersburg Pier during the final leg of the regatta. Other landmarks include the old drawbridge on US-19/I-275 north of the old Sunshine Skyway, as well as shots of Edgemont Key in the distance. The air traffic control radar room was filmed on location at Atlanta Air Route Traffic Control Center in Hampton, Georgia. That was a real place. Cary Green, who played Jennifer Chester, dubbed Aubrey Jean, who portrayed Laurie Chester. As such, both sister characters were voiced by the same actress. As such, it's kind of ironic that Jennifer tells her little sister to stop saying everything I say. She also did the voice of the little girl. Cary Green eventually, she was only in a very few movies. I mean, she was in The Goonies, she was in Summer Rental, Lucas. She was in a couple other movies like Three for the Road, Burden of Proof. And then, she kind of went hiatus. She kind of just went her own way and eventually co-founded a film production company called the Independent Women Artists with Bonnie Dickinson. So
yeah, we talked about this a lot in our Lucas episodes. If you want to go back and hear our Lucas episode again, it's on our website in the show archives. Right. We're getting in lots of show plugs today.
I mean, yeah, it's just, you always wonder what happened to Cary Green? Well, that's what happened. She just stopped kind of doing, a lot of acting. But she is okay. She has a film production company, so she's doing okay. Where was I at? Oh, Jimmy Buffett's Turning Around song that plays during the closing credits and also plays during the montage where they're fixing the barnacle. The soundtrack is the only place where that song is released.
Really? That's pretty interesting.
Turning around. Anyway.
It's a very classic 80s montage.
It is.
Yeah.
And of course, fitting for Buffett to do something about, the beach, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It feels very summery. Yeah.
Yeah. There are several movie posters seen when Sandy and the kids go to the theater that you were mentioning, right? So the movies that are being advertised are Airplane, which came out in 1980, Dragon Slayer in 1981, Uncommon Valor, this came out in 1983, Footloose in 1984, which also the kids were listening to the Kenny Loggins Footloose song when they went into the movie, and also the movie Top Secret, which which came out in 1994. Not surprising, all these movies are Paramount Pictures productions. The same,
yep.
You know, production company that made, you know, Summer Rentals.
Because they had them already. That's why they're there.
That's
yeah.
why they're there. And they had the rights to do so, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The movie in the USA was originally classified with a PG-13 rating, but after cuts further editing, the film was reclassified with a PG rating.
Yeah, you can tell there's a little bit of sexual undertones that felt like they may have been dialed back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some slight adult stuff in there that you can tell was probably toned down.
Right.
Yeah, but it's fun. But it's fine. You know, I mean, it's you could show your kids if they're like 10 or 9 or 10.
Yeah.
You know,
they probably just stayed away from that like Porky's humor or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
And one of the other things I didn't have on here because I was just going to talk about one of the writers that I talked about before. What was his name? Barry Diller. He was one of the ones that came up with like the idea where he left and like all the people came to his house and there's like a whole party going on.
Yeah.
That basically happened to him when John Belushi and his entourage like showed up at his house and like he found like, you know, John Belushi just like hanging out in his bed and whatnot.
Yeah, like just things took over. Yeah,
yeah, all coked out and, you know, everything else. Yeah. And he's just like, what is going on? So, yeah. So when you see that character, I thought about that later. I was like, oh, my gosh, that had to have been crazy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was probably like back in the, you know, late 70s, like early 80s with all that going on. $2.8 million on its sixth and final weekend. And it was second to Back to the Future.
It's funny to think how little movies made back then compared to how much they make nowadays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you could go to the movies for like $2.
Yeah, and they would also do rolling releases where a movie would come out and then it would slowly come out throughout the country. Now it's everywhere all at once.
Yeah.
So
it's true. Yeah. Because even though that 6 weeks that was at the main, you know, the big cities, and then it would go, you know, to all the other places or whatever.
Places like where you and I are, yeah, basically the flyover states.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Rotten Tomatoes scores 17% critics.
Yikes.
51% audience.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue that. I don't agree with either of them, but, I mean, it's definitely better than that by a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people are going to have their opinions.
I mean,
I think it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I remember the other movie that we talked about that John Candy was in.
Armed and Dangerous?
Yeah, it got like a terrible, like, low score. I'm not going to repeat
it. I really liked Armed and Dangerous, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear about our episode of Armed and Dangerous, you can hear it in our show archives on our website.
All these. This is just like one big plug for all of our.
Why don't you go
shows.
To our website? We spend a lot of time on the website, so please go to it.
Shameless plug. I mean, if we're going to plug our own show, we're going to use our own airtime for it, right?
Yeah.
The film. Okay, so we'll just move on. So this is my tie-in to tie-in to The Great Outdoors, right? In the film, in Summer Rental, John Candy's character's name is Jack Chester. Later in The Great Outdoors in 1988, he played Chet Ripley, who also suffers mishaps during family vacation. And in one scene is called Chester by Dan Aykroyd's character, which he angrily replies, "Don't call me Chester. Call me that one more time, and you're going to go home with a dent in your forehead." So, yeah, calls him Jack Chester, Chet Ripley. Yeah, it's kind of weird, right?
In the shared, like, Candy Vacation universe, yeah.
Yeah. Great Outdoors, 1988. The film was shot under the working title Big Country, but was changed to avoid confusion with the movie Big, which was to come out at the same time. The film was shot on location at Bass Lake, California, a small resort town near Yosemite National Park, over 3 weeks in October of 1987. That's another thing. Like, Summer Rental was made in 4 weeks. This movie was made in 3 weeks.
That seems pretty short for movies at this time.
Yeah, that's also like really fast. I mean, how many movies do you know that today they take like a month or 3 weeks to make?
Definitely not movies that have movie stars in them like John Candy and Dan Aykroyd, you know?
Ducey's Bass Lake Lodge, a rustic 1940s restaurant, was featured as Wally and Juanita's Perk Pine Lodge. The Loon Nest Vacation Cabin, built on the back lot at Universal Studios, was designed to match the style of Ducey's existing cabins. The lakeside restaurant used in the movie was Ducey's Bar and Grill in Bass Lake, California, which unfortunately burned to the ground shortly after filming due to a gas fire. The rebuilt restaurant today has posters and memorabilia from the film hanging on its walls as a reminder of the old restaurant. I don't know if you can buy a shirt there that says, I hate the old 96, but I bet you can. Several times throughout the movie, characters were seen drinking Point beer. Point is an actual beer made in Stevens Point, Central Wisconsin, and is very popular throughout Central and Northern Wisconsin, where the movie takes place. A Point beer sign is also seen in one of the restaurants in the film.
So it must be a nice little detail to make it seem like the part of the country you're supposed to come from that only locals would really get, but it would really sell the idea to locals that this takes place there.
Yeah, because, I mean, cool. regional beers was very sort of, like, popular, nowadays it's like, you know, unless it's like some, it's coming back now because we have all these, like, microbreweries. But there were local macro breweries, if you will, that were in a different part of the country. Like, I remember going to Chicago and going to Wrigley Field, and first time I ever heard of old style beer. You know, and this was like in the, you know, 80s or 90s or whatever. It was probably like 93, I think. And it was like, I never heard of old style beer. I don't know. But yeah, there's all these different regional flavors. Point beer. The original John Hughes script, Roman's Redemption, came through a daring rescue of his twin girls who had caught a giant fish that towed them around the lake in a small rowboat. A mechanical fish was built for the film, but when it could not be made to work correctly, the script was rewritten around the legend of the ball-headed bear and the chase in the final act.
That's interesting because, you know, because Candy's story about the bear in the beginning of the movie is one of the better parts of the film where he's telling the legend.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to think that was a late addition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they added all that. One thing, too, that I thought was, like, really funny, that I always think is funny in this movie, like, it's just kind of a weird amusing, is that before he shoots the bear, he grabs that shotgun that's, like, the lamp. And he plugs it in. Like he has to plug it in before he shoots it or something.
Yeah, that's a weird. Yeah, I noticed that. That's a fun little detail. Yeah,
I love that bit. All right. The bald bear. Speaking of the bald bear, is played by Bart the Bear, an Alaskan Kodiak bear who has appeared in several movies, including White Fang, Legends of the Fall, The Bear, 12 Monkeys. And was Ben as a cub in the TV show The Life and Times of Grizzly Adams.
Yeah, so basically Bart the Bear was kind of a celebrity actor bear.
Yes.
Yeah, he was in a lot of things.
Bart was born in 1977 at the Baltimore Zoo. So then somebody bought him and turned him into a Hollywood superstar. The music of The Great Outdoors this is just an oddity kind of thing. It was by Thomas Newman, who's the youngest son of Alfred Newman, who Alfred Newman won the Academy Award for Best Original Score 9 times. Right?
Wow.
Yeah, and he's also Thomas Newman is a cousin of Randy Newman. He's his first cousin once removed. Oddly enough. Yeah, the Newman family. Very much into music. Rotten Tomatoes score is 44%. 70% audience. A little bit higher.
That feels a little more accurate to how I know people who... Most people I know who like The Great Outdoors remember it fondly from when they were kids like you and I do.
Yeah. Yeah, we watched it. It was on, USA, TBS, like all the time. I think even they like would edit the scenes a little bit, and I know like what the raccoons say. You know, their little,
yeah,
you know, dialogue at the bottom were cleaned up. You know,
yeah, it would have more like TV friendly things for sure.
Yeah, TV friendly dialogue or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we get to, we've already done the, you know, whether we would keep them or extra day or,
yeah. Or, so, or not. We broke from format a little bit there, but let's talk about,
forget.
It's okay. No, it's very loose here at Video Culture. Yeah. So let's talk about recommendations. What movie would you, if you had to do a triple feature and you were required to show these two films, what would be the third film you would pair with it?
That is a good question. I mean, I think any of the movies could go along, but to just kind of go along with the shenanigans of, you know, the film that's very sort of episodic, but also has like a that also ends in a boat race is One Crazy Summer. I don't know if that was your recommendation, but I
actually thought about it, but I picked a different one. But yeah, I would totally recommend One Crazy Summer as a good one for this. It's a very good call there, and it's a great movie.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely more like younger adults, I guess you would say. It's not really like sort of family oriented, but has a lot of very like similar elements of you know, vacation and you know, being near like water, dealing with the, you know, rich versus like slum, you know, kind of thing or whatever. And like I said, it also ends in a boat race.
Yeah, and it's got a little bit of romance in there.
Yeah.
It can almost be like the teenage son grew up a little bit, and this is like the sequel to Great Outdoors in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
As far as like tone and vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. I can dig it.
So yeah, I think One Crazy Summer, besides being again just a great John Cusack movie, I think it would go well with those two. For me,
that's Bobcat Goldthwait.
Yeah, he is
terrible.
That was pretty awful. Yeah, I can't put that over. I'm sorry. Is Ryan okay? What's going on over there? So my recommendation. Again, to stick with like lakes and like vacation, is the 1991 movie that stars Mr. Bill Murray, and it's called What About Bob?
Oh yeah, goes sailing too.
Yeah, it's basically about a psychotherapist who has a neurotic OCD patient who's just so codependent on him. When the therapist tries to go away on vacation, the patient, played by Bill Murray, follows him, and hijinks ensue. And it's got a very similar vibe to The Great Outdoors. I think it's a very funny movie. It's something I watched a lot as a kid around the same age that I watched The Great Outdoors a lot. So to me, they feel very like tonally similar, and I think they would go really well together.
Yeah, it is a good, because it is a family that's on vacation or whatever, like up in the lake area, yeah, or whatever. And yeah,
and the psychotherapist is played by Richard Dreyfuss, who we talked about in our episode where we did Always.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear our episode on Always, you can check it out on our show archives on our website.
Did you hit a button every time? It's like, you know, it's like, oh, there's the thing.
I just wanted to get those new website numbers up so bad, right?
Well, I mean, we're up to like in the 60s, you know, now. We've done so many. We've talked about so many. We've done almost two movies per episode almost. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
it's just fun to occasionally go back and be like, hey. Well, no, and I, honestly, because people discover us all the time. And, you know, on iTunes, on Stitcher. Those only go back maybe 10, 15 episodes, and this is what, our 65th episode, 64?
Yes, 64.
So that's a lot of background that people may not be aware of. So if you want to check out our show archives, they're all there. We'll again plug it at the very end of the show as part of our closing, but we've got a lot of episodes, a lot of content, and we go back to a lot of the same stars over and over again because they're just kind of woven into our childhood.
Yeah. Well, and to go back to, you know, What About Bob? I think You can read about that now. Like, a lot of, you know, things have come out about that movie and about the relationship between Richard Dreyfuss and Bill Murray. And a lot of the anger probably directed at, you know, Bob in the movie from Richard Dreyfuss' character was probably very real, because they did not get along very well on that set, from what I hear, from what I read about. So, but yeah, it's a excellent, fantastic movie, and a lot of great scenes, a lot of great quotable scenes. Yeah, that's also a fantastic movie. Fantastic, fantastic choice, my friend.
Well, and so I think if you wanted to have like a summer vacation weekend, you could watch those four movies and have a pretty good time. That's a great like Sunday, like I'm going to watch movies all day kind of day. Yep. Watch those four. You'll be in a good, happy place.
Yeah, you'll feel like you're on vacation if you're not on vacation.
Save it for a rainy day when it's raining one summer day, and you'll be able to escape from the bad weather and just have a nice, pleasant time.
Yeah, you can escape with some pina coladas.
Some mojitos. Yeah.
Mojitos. All right. Well, that about does it for this week's episode, or this. I don't know. We come out every 2 weeks. I say this week, but this episode. I don't know what we got coming up next time.
Who knows? It's all chaotic here.
But there's going to be some more actors in it that we'll talk about. Some more
that
stuff.
We'll try to work into references to other episodes we've already done, apparently.
Maybe not.
Maybe we'll do something really new. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I promise you there will be episodes, because we are hustling to get episodes done.
Yes.
But so we really appreciate you guys, and thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, and if you have any suggestions for us, you know, hit us up on Facebook or tweet at us. We'd love to hear your suggestions. So
always, yeah, and we have gotten some suggestions. We have made note of them, and we are working them into the schedule for all you guys who have sent us suggestions. We have gotten them, and we are working them in. So I have no doubt. If we haven't responded to you in person, know that we got them, we read them, and we appreciated them, and we appreciate you guys.
Yes, thank you very much. And until next time, I'm Ryan Acree.
Have a great summer, Ryan. I'm Matthew Estrey. Go watch the movies, guys.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at Video Culture 2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us, and let's all watch movies together.